Good morning and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. I'm Eric George and it's Monday the 31st of December 2012, New Year's Eve. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to college sports myself. It's kind of something that falls a little bit behind by the wayside with everything else I kind of pay attention to. But this is the point in the year where I pretend to be a fan because obviously the bowl games start in football and it all gets a lot of high profile attention. I'm over here in Canada right now where it's basically all that's on TV. So to kind of help understand the whole culture of college sport and perhaps discuss a little bit about what to expect in the upcoming games, I thought I should introduce somebody who's been at college for the last 6 months in America. Liam Quinn, how are you?
Yeah, good, Eric. Nice to be here.
Yeah, we've done plenty of other podcasts, but you haven't been on Sports Polygamy yet, so it's good to include you here. So you were in Michigan State for the last 6 months, correct?
Yeah. So it was kind of a first-hand experience of the craziness that is college football in America.
So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously an alien concept to Australian university students because there's literally no parallel. So I thought we might as well just start with the whole concept of sports on campus. I mean, Michigan State's not a small sports program. They're reasonably high profile. So when you're on campus, do you get a feel that you're connected with the sports programs, or do they inhabit a whole different, you know, world to the everyday student?
Well, it is obviously it's kind of separate in some ways. I mean, it's not like it's not like, you know, the regular students are kind of getting flown down to Georgia or somewhere for a football game with it like they do. But you're not kind of completely separate as you are at some schools. I know at places that are, you know, the big southern schools, especially for basketball and things like that, will have completely separate classrooms and living accommodation and stuff like that. Where at Michigan State, you kind of, you know, you do kind of like a couple of classes you'd have with football players and basketball players and stuff like that. So they are kind of a bit of a special creature almost on campus, but it is still connected.
Do they stand out like a sore thumb amongst everyone else?
Well, I mean, when you're 6'7" and 350 pounds, it's kind of hard not to stand out, but everyone does knows mostly who they are, so they kind of, I think, get a bit of a good run around the city for being almost, you know, they're kind of almost celebrities in the town, really.
Right. And does that really just extend to the football and basketball teams in men's?
Like the hockey a little bit, because Michigan State actually has a pretty good hockey program as well, but mainly just, yeah, especially basketball, because one of the problems with football is because they're always wearing helmets, you're not really 100% sure who they are some of the times, but basketball, obviously they've got, you know, their face on ESPN a few times a week, so it's kind of easy to identify them.
And in a big program, obviously these students have a drastically different lifestyle and experience of college to a student. How connected do you feel to them as you know, fellow collegiates? I mean, do they kind of a bit alien to everyone else?
Well, it's interesting. I kind of thought it would be like that, but then, you know, they're in their classes. They have to they have people come around and check if they're in their class and stuff like that. They have to get their name marked off because obviously, if you miss many classes, you can't play and things like that. So it actually was more kind of more studious than I thought it would be in a lot of ways.
Okay. And what about the obviously a big thing, especially in football, and I guess basketball is just starting to pick up now, is game day when there's home games. Is there a significant buzz around campus in the lead up to it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, they sort of close part of campus on game days. They'll shut the roads to go through campus. They have police operating there and things like that, and then it's at Michigan State. It was interesting. It's not like this at all colleges, but on a game day, you can actually drink legally in public if it's on campus.
Wow!
So you could, obviously you can't anywhere in America normally, but during those days, if you're over 21 and you're on the campus, then yeah, you're good to go. So it was interesting.
And when do all the randoms turn up? I mean, it's obviously not just students who attend these games. It's you know, alumni and interstate students and all that kind of stuff. So surely the hordes must descend upon campus at some point.
Yeah, well, a lot of the alumni and things would be there pretty early, and they set up their tailgates and their cookouts and things like that pretty early in the morning. If it was a game around noon, then they'd probably be there 8, 9 a.m. in the morning and just kind of getting ready. So it's pretty intense. It's good fun, though.
Mm-hmm. And the ESPN game day, I know you got to see it. Did they come to Michigan State themselves?
Yeah, when we played Ohio State back, I think it was about the third week of the season they did, which was incredible. They kind of, you know, kind of roll in with this posse. It was about, you know, all these, you know, vans and production trucks and all that sort of thing, and they set up on the campus, and it was, they kind of took over the place for a couple of days. But it was, again, like, it's just the sheer scale and the magnitude of it was incredible.
Well, that's the American way, right? Spectacle above everything else. And in that case, I'm assuming once again there's a whole bunch more strangers in a different crowd, because there's people who just follow that game day spectacle around the nation.
Well, there is to some extent, but it's still remains relatively kind of home in the crowd. It'd be about, most games are probably about 85% Michigan State, and then there'd be the kind of the traveling part, and that changed depending on who you're playing, and obviously, yeah, that sort of thing. For a big game against, say, Michigan or Ohio State, you normally have more fans come out. So, but it's still, you know, still remains pretty tight-lipped for that kind of, you know, home field advantage sort of thing.
Do they do any kind of traditions like homecoming ceremonies or anything at Michigan State?
Yep. Yeah, we had a homecoming, which I think every college pretty much has one of those. We had one of those. It was later in the season when we played against Iowa, and then you get all the old graduates came down and, you know, partied for the weekend and things like that, which is a bit of fun to see, you know, see friends, parents and stuff come down there for the week. So that was good.
I mean, is there anything else that's peculiar to Michigan State traditions wise?
Not as much of the football. I mean, we obviously have all the fight songs and things like that, but
yeah.
But some of the schools, especially when you look at some of the other ones that have the big, you know, world famous marching bands and things like that, we have, you know, even the stadium at Michigan State's just about 80,000 people, and we're almost a smaller stadium in the area. So there is some of the other schools around, you know, Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State and stuff like that, that have their big 100,000 seat stadiums, and it's just incredible.
So how big is the Michigan State Stadium?
About 80,000. I think it's about 78.
Mm. And I'm assuming that's full most of the time.
Pretty much, yeah.
Man. So attending those games, I'm assuming, is a pretty expensive enterprise, whether it's basketball or football.
Well, it was interesting. If you buy the tickets separately, it's pretty expensive. But as a student, you could buy football tickets. So you get a seat for every home game, which I think, from memory, cost me about $160. So when you put it that way, you're paying about, you know, seven home games, you're about $25-30 a game.
Wow.
So it's kind of pretty cheap, and then you could sell them off on, you know, kind of like student, there's, you know, Michigan State has almost like a student eBay system online, and you could sell your tickets on there for, you know, for the big games they were selling for, you know, $80, $90 and things like that. So you could make your money back pretty quickly.
And do you reckon the vast majority of the crowd are made up by people purchasing tickets that way?
No, I think a lot still have those student tickets, but then once you get up into kind of the real seats, you know, away from the student section and stuff like that, a lot of it's either alumni or people in the area or kind of fans and things like that. But the students are kind of wearing kind of a big third of the stadium, so to speak.
One thing I've always been pretty curious about with this college system in America is it seems like there's a strong tradition for people to travel quite a way away from home to go to university, whether it's, you know, a place that they can get into a good program or it's where their father went or whatever. But how does that affect the connection of a local area to its team when people are obviously supporting teams that, you know, that live halfway across the country?
Well, it's interesting because in the town, everything has a Michigan State logo on it somewhere. Like, I mean, you know, service stations would have it. McDonald's had Michigan State logos and things all over and stuff like that. So it's really just all inclusive. If you're like, even some of my friends at the university were from Tennessee, and so they live down near the University of Tennessee, which is obviously a big school in its own right, but a kind of diehard Michigan State fan. So I think it's, once you start going there, or if you live in the area, it's probably a bit different, but once you start attending the school, then you're kind of hooked for life on that school.
Mm-hmm. This is obviously the more challenging part of the podcast, I guess, is where we get to the compare and contrast with an Australian system. I mean, now that you're going back to La Trobe at the start of next year, I mean, do you wish that there was an 80,000 seat stadium there that you could watch essentially professional grade sport?
Well, it's strange. I mean, it's just so different to the culture. I mean, what do we have? We have the university games.
Yeah. And that's, which is just a piss up.
Pretty much, yeah. Let's just go to the Gold Coast and play handball, isn't it? But no, it just wouldn't really work. I mean, because especially considering the fact that, you know, for AFL, once you turn 18, once you're done high school, you just go to the pros if you're good enough. Where obviously for the NFL, you have to spend at least 3 years in college. You have to be a junior, so your third year. Or basketball, you have to at least spend 1 year. So they really do push that sort of college tradition, and it's been around for so long, so it works. Where if we tried to have a similar situation, it just wouldn't work. And it's just, you know, it's just the scale of it. I mean, Latrobe, yeah, I wouldn't know exactly, but imagine it probably has about 4,000 students or so. So, I mean, it just wouldn't, yeah, it just wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. But do you think you'll miss it moving back to Australia?
Yeah, it is definitely something you'll miss, but I mean, then I can go to the MCG and watch football there. So I mean, you kind of get it a bit different. But
I mean, what do you think about the talent development side of it as well? I did a podcast a couple of months ago now on the AFL draft, and we were kind of discussing the fact that, I mean, obviously you can look in basketball and football and even baseball, you know, top draft picks can have an instant impact on a team and turn them around. But in Australia, because they're so much younger and so much greener, it takes a lot longer for them to develop. Do you think Australian sport struggles a little bit by not having that intermediate between essentially amateur play and professional play?
Well, I think it's just a lot of it, especially comes down to with American football is, you know, going from high school to the NFL, you couldn't do it purely because of the size and things like that. When you look at, you know, the average NFL linebacker, I think he's probably about 6'1", 6'2", and they're, you know, 250 pounds. So they're massive, massive human beings, where if you tried to do that straight from high school, you couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You would, you know, you'd be 180 pounds dripping wet and you'd get killed. So you kind of need that extra years to develop and just kind of to grow into it, where for the AFL, you do see when there's kind of young kids and they do obviously look a bit out of place and smaller and that sort of thing, but you can still have a bit of an impact, where if you tried to go from high school straight to the NFL, it would end very badly for a lot of high schoolers.
I guess the other part that it ties into that we haven't even really touched on is just the concept of campus life. Like, I think it's a big part in America. Like I said, it seems that, you know, people travel to a college and it's a big part of being involved in that college. And that's, you know, a development process for them, where in Australia it just seems like a vocational thing. You go, you do your class, you go home, and you're not that heavily into university as a cultural thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, unless you kind of live on campus, which I know some people do in Australia, but it isn't anywhere near as much as the people that kind of that travel to it. I mean, you know, I'm the same. You kind of drive to the car park at university, walk to your classes, finish your classes, get to your car and go home. We're obviously in the States, because most of you are living there. I mean, even in Michigan State, there was about 40,000, 45,000 students living in dorms, so living on the campus. And it was just intense, because you're always there and it's just become such a part of your life.
Well, the one interesting side, I think, of the impact that college sport has in America is the fact that it genuinely competes professional sport in a lot of places. I mean, people suggest teams like the Jacksonville Jaguars and a couple of others really do struggle because of the adjacency to other big college programs. Do you think that's going to change anytime soon? I mean, is college always going to be the kind of the closest thing in a lot of people's hearts when it comes to allegiances?
Well, I think it is so much easier to be connected to your college team, because you can identify with it and things like that, where then when you look at, you know, the NBA or the NFL and you think, you know, there's guys that just kind of move around teams a fair bit, getting paid millions of dollars to do it, and it's harder to make that connection, where for college you can say, you know, gee, when I was 19, I was going to these games, and I remember when this was happening, I remember watching Magic Johnson in, you know, in the 70s and stuff like that when he played for Michigan State. And you really can tie into it a lot more, where pros, I think it's just a lot harder to find that emotional bond now than it is with a college team.
But to play devil's advocate, I mean, if you're a Duke basketball fan, there's a pretty extraordinary turnover in the team every year. And even if you're following a strong football program, you're going to have your best players only going to play there for 3 to 4 years. Whereas if you've got a franchise player in a football or basketball team, he could be there for a decade.
Yeah, but it becomes more about I think college is a lot more, it's less built around the actual player itself and built more around the team. So it's not about, you know, as you're saying, say with Duke, it's not about, you know, the freshman that comes in for a year to play basketball then leaves and goes to the pros. It's about, you know, him being part of the culture at Duke and kind of representing it. And then you buy into that more than you do individual players, where you see a lot of pro sports now, especially more in basketball than football, where people kind of follow star players around more than actually the teams.
I guess that also probably explains why the most popular franchises in any league in America are probably the longest standing ones and the ones that really have a brand in their own right that's stronger than any individual player.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things when you look at any of the new teams, like, you know, like the Jacksonville Jaguars, like you said before, why they struggle to build a connection, because, you know, even with the Jags, again, they're kind of competing against, you know, University of Florida, Florida State and all those sort of big schools that have had a massive story tradition, and they're trying to buy in with something new, and there's no real, you know, no real connection.
I mean, if you look at a franchise that's done quite well in its youth, I think the obvious example is the Thunder, who I've always seen as kind of a quasi college team in the NBA, and the way the crowd behaves and the kind of energy on the bench and the culture surrounding the team. So it's interesting to kind of consider that as an anomaly in the NBA.
Yeah, and especially I think it works so well for the Thunder because they're such a young team as well. They were more last year after that when they still had Harden there and things like that. So they could really kind of play off that youthful connection and build off it where a lot of teams, even the successful ones that are older, don't really have that.
So is there any single thing you think you'll miss the most having come back to Australia?
I think the basketball games, actually. I mean, I'm probably more of a bit of a basketball guy than American football anyway, slightly. But Michigan State's student section for the basketball is fantastic. It's about 3,000 people, and whenever the team's on defense, you have to kind of jump up and down and yell the whole time, and the rest of the time you have chants and things like that. So after 2.5 hours of that, you kind of feel like you've played a game of basketball as well. But it's good fun though.
And do they have a decent shot of qualifying for March Madness?
Yeah, well, I think we're about 15th or so in the country now. So we should be pretty, like, you know, we've got the Tom Izzo, who's our coach, has been there for, you know, generations, been there for a few decades, and he always gets the team pretty close. I mean, even last year we were one of the top four teams in the country, and then we just, you know, were unlucky in the tournament. I think we got knocked out in the final eight, but this year we should, you know, they'd be saying to at least make 16 or 8 as a kind of minimum.
It's interesting the amount of times you say we in these conversations. Do you think you're going to be an MSU guy for life now?
I kind of can't not be, really. I mean, I've got that's kind of what we're talking about. Once you have that connection, you are kind of, it's almost like you have a bit of a bond with the school. And I mean, obviously I wasn't there for long. It was only a year and things like that, compared to some people that spend, you know, if you do your graduate school, you can spend 6-7 years there. But you do really, you immerse yourself in the culture so much, and it's so strong over there that you kind of can't help but identify with it in some way.
Yeah, sounds like a pretty fantastic experience. Let's just quickly turn our eyes to the big bowl games coming up. I mean, it's kind of a bizarre experience. Like, I always spend a bit of December in January in Canada, and it's kind of, I like football a lot, and you just watch these teams that I've never heard of playing bowls I've never heard of. But the rubber meets the road New Year's Eve when the BCS, the second last series actually of it before they switch to their playoff format, kicks off. So have you got anything you're particularly excited about in these big games?
Obviously the Rose Bowl is always a big one, which the Big Ten, which is Michigan State's conference, is normally always involved in with the Pac-12 mostly, where this year it's Stanford and Wisconsin. So two pretty big, you know, traditional franchises and things like that. So that should be a good game. And then again on New Year's Eve, on New Year's Day actually, there's Georgia and Nebraska, who again, two kind of big schools which have a bit of tradition behind them. You've got, you know, the Southern team like Georgia up against, you know, a Midwest, you know, Northern team like Nebraska. So it's a bit of a kind of a clash, which is an interesting one there. They've got Oregon and Kansas State, which is a little bit after New Year's Eve. It's actually the third, I'm pretty sure. And purely just, you know, if anyone has never watched a college football game in their life, if you watch Oregon play when they'll score 60 points a game, and it's just fantastic to watch. They're so quick, and it's incredible. It's like nothing else in college sports watching Oregon. They just run up the score, and it's incredible. And then obviously the big one on the 7th, which is Notre Dame Alabama for the actual championship, for the national championship, will be huge. You know, Notre Dame trying to become the big powerhouse they were, you know, a few decades ago, and Alabama's obviously been kind of the team to beat for the last decade. So,
but isn't this a bit of an college football kind of matchup? Because when I think of big bowl games that I've watched recently, they tend to be quite high scoring affairs. But aren't Notre Dame and Alabama reasonably defensive oriented teams?
Well, they are two traditionally two of the best defense in the country, and even Alabama, when they won the title last year, it was a very kind of lockdown. It's almost a more of a pro style approach, where it's, you know, well, maybe not the pros anymore, but what it was a few years ago when it was, yeah, it's had a strong running game and a solid defense, and then you can kind of take care of the scoring a bit later on. Where Alabama and Notre Dame, they just lock people down and then go from there. I mean, even when Michigan State played against Notre Dame, we actually went into it as one of the one of the better teams in the country. I think we were in the top 10 or so at the time, maybe top 15. And yeah, they only held us to a field goal, so we just got destroyed. And they were very good. So should be an interesting game.
And do you have an opinion on the death of the bowl series and a switch to a playoff format?
Well, it kind of has to happen, but the problem is it's only going to be four teams. When part of it, like some years, it will work great. I mean, this year there was no real. Once Notre Dame went undefeated, they were always going to make it, and so Alabama was kind of the consensus number two. So it kind of worked out okay this year. But some years, I mean, four teams won't be enough, and you kind of think they should extend it eventually to, you know, eight or even, you know, 12 or 16 teams and make it a big, big sort of tournament. Because one of the greatest things about college sports is March Madness for the basketball, when they have, you know, 64 teams, and it's just incredible to watch. And it's, you know, a few weeks of just basketball and basketball and basketball, and you get, you know, you'll have a big team like, say, Alabama might play a smaller team in the first round of the tournament. They might lose. And there's that kind of upset threat that's always there, and it just makes it so exciting.
I think, and that's certainly one of the attractions, is that potential for the fairy tale run, which you always seem to get one or two every March Madness. One of the barriers I always find with college sport, trying to catch on in America from a foreigner's perspective, is the kind of Byzantine conference format they use, with teams constantly switching, and you see teams having very strong, if not undefeated, records in weak conferences that never get any respect, and teams, you know, they kind of have to weigh them up that way. It's going to be a challenge for this playoff format it's not going to alleviate some of the issues they have now of weighing up the respective records of teams in different conferences who've never played each other.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with the playoffs. Everyone's kind of saying it'll cure all the problems that the BCS has, but it won't do that. It'll just present new problems, because then now it's kind of always been, for the national championship, it's kind of like, well, who's the third team? And they're the one that misses out. And, you know, they might have they have the same record or something like that, and they just won't make it. Where obviously, once they've got four teams in the playoffs, then kind of who'll be the fifth team that gets left out, or the sixth team and stuff like that. So they'll still have massive issues where, you know, as we said before with the basketball, they've done it well enough. So it's pretty much, there are still teams that miss out, obviously, but it's kind of big enough. It seems pretty all-inclusive. Like, if you're good enough, you'll make it. Where I think there's a lot of teams in football where, you know, have great years. I mean, people like Texas A&M and stuff that actually beat Alabama this year and have, you know, had the Heisman winning quarterback and stuff like that don't make it. And they've had a great year, and on form, they would be able to really challenge pretty much any team in the country. But because they lost a couple of games early in the season, their season was pretty much done with from the start. So they'll still have a lot of issues to work out with the system.
And you're suggesting that the only real way to fix it is to expand the number of seeds?
Yeah, I think I think eight would be kind of a good starting point, because then you do get, you know, you get a nice kind of cross-section of teams, but eventually you think that has to go out to even, you know, 12 or 16.
But then you're looking at 4 weeks of competition, which might be a bit hard to fit in the crowded American sports calendar, I guess.
Well, it would be, but also, you know, you could use it, and you could take out a game or two at the end of the regular season, and then because they've had the regular season finished, and it was, you know, late November, so you've had pretty much a month of doing nothing anyway, and, you know, it would be doable. Obviously, they have to make some changes to the scheduling and stuff like that, but I just think one of the problems that people have had in recent years with the BCS is it seems kind of illegitimate at times. So, yeah, the only way to really make that is to have a playoff sort of system.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, I think that'll do us for today, because I think if we talk too much longer about seedings, people's eyes will glaze over. But thanks very much for coming on, Liam, and sharing your experience of the college system over in America.
Thanks, Eric. Talk to you next time.
Absolutely. We will be back either later this week or next week with a bit of a preview of the year to come in sport, depending on when I can pin down Kirk. Until then, I'm Eric George. Thanks for listening. See ya.